Connolly. This is New Hampshire Public Radio News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Connolly, and this is The Exchange. Most American counties are considered rural, and according to the Census Bureau, most are losing population. It's a trend fueled in part by more Americans, especially younger people, choosing to move to urban areas. But it's also about demographics. As rural residents tend to be older, they're less likely to have young children at home. And there's an economic impact to this, as these areas become less attractive to new businesses. Also, with fewer working folk, the tax base declines, making it harder to invest in infrastructure, from roads to parks to broadband. Here in New Hampshire, these demographic and economic shifts are familiar, especially between the state's rural north and west and more urban and suburban southeast. Now, a recent analysis by a leading Granite State economist examines these two New Hampshires more closely. Ross Cattell, chancellor of the Community College System of New Hampshire and forecast manager for the New England Economic Partnership, describes both the strengths and challenges of each. And he argues each needs a unique economic strategy that takes its own characteristics into account. Today in The Exchange, the two New Hampshires, who they are, why understanding them matters. Let's hear from you. Which New Hampshire do you live in? What do you think it has going for it? How could it be made stronger? Also, what responsibility, if any, do you think the state's more prosperous counties have toward those less well off? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Ross Cattell is here. Ross, good to see you. Welcome back.
Yeah, good to be with you, Laura.
Also joining us by phone is Mill Duncan. She's Research Director of AGRI, a Food and Agriculture Policy Group in D.C., Professor Emeritus at UNH, a fellow at UNH's Carsey Institute, where she also served as founding director. And Mill Duncan recently updated her book, Worlds Apart, Why Poverty Persists in Rural America. Mill Duncan, we've talked about these issues before. It's great to have you back.
It's good to be back. Thanks, Laura.
Well, Ross, let's look at the map, first of all, of these two New Hampshires. Just paint a picture for us, please.
Sure. What we did was we defined Metro New Hampshire as those counties that are officially part of the Boston metropolitan area. That's areas that are economically most linked to Boston, the central city, and the metropolitan area. A lot of commuting to Boston from the New Hampshire counties, and a lot of economic integration. And those we're calling the four metro New Hampshire counties: Rockingham, Hillsborough, Stratford, and Merrimack. And then the rural counties in New Hampshire are those counties in New Hampshire that are not officially part of the Boston metropolitan area. That includes six of the 10 New Hampshire counties: Cheshire, Sullivan, Belknap, Carroll, Grafton, and Coos County. And those rural counties, the six of the 10 New Hampshire counties, comprise approximately two-thirds of the land area of the state of New Hampshire, and yet have only one-quarter of the population.
Wow, that's
huge. Laura, you flip that, and the metro New Hampshire has one-third the land area and three-quarters of the population. So, go ahead.
And it's interesting because we're used to thinking about this purely as a north-south thing, but it's a little more subtle than that.
Yes, Ross. That's why, the metro connected to the Boston central city and that economy. And then the rural is officially defined as non-metro, and then it is in the north, and then it also includes the western counties. And those areas have a lot of differences, and that's what we highlight in the two New Hampshire papers. That have significance. They have significance for the community college system of New Hampshire because we have community colleges that serve those rural counties. So we have colleges up in Claremont. We have River Valley Community College, which is based in Claremont but also serves Keene. We have a community college up in Berlin that also serves Littleton, which is a White Mountains Community College. And then we have a community college up in Laconia, Lakes Region Community College. And those colleges, the population there and the economic needs and the community college system, we spend a lot of time linking our education and training programs to the needs of industry there and the labor market there. So we have to be aware of that. So we undertook the paper because we want to be able to serve those communities and the communities of Metro New Hampshire more effectively. So you have to understand the demographics and the economics of those areas and see how they're similar and how they're different. And we're trying to connect those two because there are some strong economic and social and community foundations in Metro New Hampshire and also in rural New Hampshire. And those two New Hampshires could benefit from a stronger connection. And that's what we're trying to also do with the Community College System of New Hampshire.
Again, the paper is called The Two New Hampshires. What Does It Mean? It's by Dr. Ross Cattell, Chancellor of the Community College System of New Hampshire. We've put it up on our website, nhpr.org, if you want to take a look at it. You can join us now with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. And Mill Duncan, you've been studying rural matters, rural poverty for a long time. What are some of the themes that you've seen emerge, both nationally and here in New Hampshire?
Well, one thing that we noticed when I was at the Carsey Institute that I think holds true and applies to New Hampshire is that there are, as Ross was saying, different types of rural America. So when you look at rural America broadly, you have the places that are close to the metropolitan embrace, such as Ross just described. But you have amenity-rich areas in the classic that you think of as Aspen, Colorado. And in some ways, our own Carroll County is an amenity-rich area where people are attracted for the natural beauty of the place and a vital community builds up around that. You also have transitioning places where you have natural resource-based economies that can be natural amenities, but there's been a extractive or manufacturing base, and that's like our Coos County, where the paper and pulp industry has gone through some hard times, and now that's a transitioning economy. And then nationally, you have declining population areas that really don't have attractive natural amenities like mountains or lakes or seacoast, and then you have chronically poor places. So when I recently updated Worlds Apart, as you mentioned, I went back to an Appalachian coal community and a Mississippi Delta plantation community, and then also a Northern New England mill community to see in the past 20 years how things have changed.
And what did you find, Mill?
Well, in the coal area, it was actually pretty depressing. The population has declined a lot as coal has declined and it's harder to mine there. And also there's just as in Washington County, Maine, a very bad prescriptive pill addiction problem. In the Delta, it's now the third largest gambling destination in the country, so there are lots more jobs in an area that used to be the poorest in the whole country, and a lot of adjustment there. Interestingly, in northern New England, I think it's almost like classic rural America. The manufacturing base has declined, and the jobs aren't as good, but there are, you know, new prisons, and those are providing decent jobs. There's, like in Coos County, there's an ATV park and a biomass plant being built right in the middle of downtown. So a very deliberate kind of picking up as a community and charting a future that's going to be stable but not as vital and as high pay as the paper and pulp jobs were in the past.
Here's a question for both of you, and I'll turn to you first, Mill. Are there ways that you have seen, again, in your research here in New Hampshire or nationally, Mill, that a state can help facilitate the revitalization of some of these more depressed rural areas?
You know, in looking at this, in all these different kinds of places, I'm going to sound like I'm playing right into Ross's, work, but I think investing in education from early childhood through community college systems is the key way that we can help any rural area and the people in it, whether they stay, whether they do 3-12s, which many people do, where they go to a more urban area for 12-hour shifts and then come home to family and community the other 4 days. But I think investing, there's marvelous new evidence and old evidence of how important early childhood investment is for cognitive development and social skills to make it in school and then in the workplace. And in every place I go, community colleges are a key anchor institution that have importance for just stabilizing a community as well as providing opportunities to gain human capital that are vital for the future of the place, but also, and maybe even more importantly, for the people who are going to make choices about whether to stay or leave.
So all about education. Ross, I know you're all behind that. How do you attract the professors, the educators, the teachers to come to these underserved areas to create that vitality that Mill talks about?
You know, quite often I'll speak to our own experience as a community college system of New Hampshire. We have a very strong faculty in these rural areas. And part of that is attributable to their passion for, you know, what they do is their teaching and the ability to make a difference in people's lives, but particularly in communities where education is as important as it is in rural New Hampshire. They also are particularly attracted to the communities, the community values, amenities in, you know, Laconia, in Claremont area, along the River Valley, up in Berlin in the White Mountains area.
So you're saying it's not a problem to attract people?
We really have very strong faculty. I'm relatively new to the community college system of New Hampshire, just been here 2 years. But one thing I've been most impressed with is the quality of the faculty. Many of them have PhDs. Many of them have publications. They all, you know, I look at the teaching performance and the student outcomes, and we do very well in those respects. They really like what they do. They like teaching young people and making a difference in their lives. And they like that they're really part of their communities up there. What's more difficult is some of the challenges that Milt, you know, spoke about, making sure there's adequate investment in high quality early childhood education, quality K-12 education, and that we're making strong links to the local education system, the community college system, and that all educational institutions in those communities, but particularly the community college system, is making strong links to the local economy and the needs of the local economy and thinking about the future and how if we could provide an appropriately skilled workforce, we might be able to attract more industry and more well-paying jobs to create that middle-class, working-class community that we all value up in that part of the state.
Yeah, this is one of the themes in the two New Hampshires, Ross, the idea of if you're going to invest, do it strategically,
yes,
focusing on your strengths.
Very important.
Mill Duncan, it was good to talk to you again. Thank you very much for your time.
It was good to be with you, Laura.
That's Mill Duncan, Research Director of AGRI, a food and agricultural policy group in D.C. She's also a professor emeritus at UNH and founding director of UNH's Carsey Institute. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. And when you donate your old vehicle to NHPR by December 31st, you'll receive a $50 gas gift card. Give us a call. We'll take care of all the paperwork and pick up your vehicle. You get a tax deduction and, for a limited time, a $50 gas gift card. Plus, you're supporting your New Hampshire news service. Get things started by calling 1-877-393-NHPR or visit nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and PAX World Mutual Funds, a leader in sustainable investing, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making, paxworld.com for tomorrow. From Virtual Records, presenting at Gerhard's annual Christmas guitar concerts, December 7th in Laconia, December 20th and 21st in Portsmouth, tickets at gerhard.com. And Comcast Business, supporting New Hampshire Food Bank's collection of non-perishable food items at the New Hampshire for the Holidays Expo, December 7th and 8th, more at eventsnh.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the two New Hampshires, rural and more urban and suburban. Give us a call. Which of the two do you find yourself associated with? Which New Hampshire do you live in? What do you think it has going for it? What do you think could help make it stronger? And what responsibility do you think, if any, the more prosperous parts of the Granite State have toward those who are doing less well? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We're hearing from a variety of voices around the Granite State this hour. With me in studio is Ross Cattell. He's chancellor of the Community College System of New Hampshire, also forecast manager for the New England Economic Partnership. His new white paper is The Two New Hampshire's What Does It Mean? We've put it up on our website, nhpr.org. You can take a look at it there. And Ross, before we go to our listeners and a couple other of the folks who were calling out to this hour, I did want to ask you a fundamental question. Why should we work hard to revive these areas that are struggling, to close this gap between rural and metro? You could say this is just part of a natural pattern. People are gravitating toward urban areas. You could also argue that there's something beneficial to having some urban areas and then some more countrified areas rather than, you know, spreading everybody out. So the natural progression of things.
Yeah. No, the paper highlights the two New Hampshires. But I think what's most important is to understand that we're really one New Hampshire. And New Hampshire is so wonderful and we all like the state because of it's diverse. There are places that are more similar to Boston.
Yeah, let's not change
along
that
the
diversity.
Border. But then you don't have to travel too far to be in an area that has natural beauty and is more rural and lower population density. And there are small, very pleasant communities to live in, to work in, and be part of those communities. And the greatness of New Hampshire is that we have that diversity. And you can move freely, you know, and easily across the state. And the South benefits from the North, and the North benefits from the South in many respects. And then, you know, we want to preserve that. It's very important to preserve that. And I think the two New Hampshires could complement each other. The metro New Hampshire is a stronger place, a more economically vibrant place with a lot of strong economic possibilities because it's so easy to get up, you know, to ski, to recreate, to go out to a lake, to the ocean. So we really want to preserve the geographic diversity across the state, and we want to provide different types of opportunities, community opportunities, recreational opportunities, employment opportunities across the state of New Hampshire. That's a real value. So it goes beyond just being, you know, culture and history and the way it is. But I think it's an economic asset for the state to have that diversity. And a lot of the states, I mean, you take a state, and I hate to beat up on New Jersey, but maybe I will here, is that New Jersey is the most suburbanized state in the country. And it's to many people, including many people who have located in New Hampshire, moved from New Jersey, they wanted to get away from, you know, the only option close by is to be in a suburban area or an urban area. Here, you very easily, you could go from your home in Concord. I could go from my home in Portsmouth to a more pristine rural area and
so
really enjoy it.
So what's the problem then? What's the goal then? If we don't want to become one big
suburban
mush. The goal
is people who, and families who are in what we're calling rural New Hampshire have the opportunities they deserve and that we could help them if we act collectively obtain, which is a more vital communities, more economic opportunities, and particularly the focus of us at the community college system is provide that strong middle-class opportunity to get a skilled job and be able to support their families in a way that makes for a high quality of life and sustains their families and those communities and the whole state of New Hampshire in a way that we truly value and want to support as a state.
And this may sound really crass, Ross, but I'm asking anyway. So you're saying, you know, we, meaning the whole state, need to support these rural communities, give them better economic and educational opportunities. What's in it for the South? What's in it for, you know, Manchester, Nashua, Portsmouth, Concord, in supporting these more, these more economically, I don't want to say economically depressed, but economically struggling rural areas?
Okay.
Why should they do that? Well, first of all,
you know, I'll go back to what I said before, which is really, I live in metro New Hampshire, but I really enjoy, part of my job, but also in visits with my family up to rural New Hampshire and having that and being part of that larger state community that includes that diversity and the diversity of opportunity for my family and for, you know, the experiences I have not only in my work week but during my full week. Economically, there's a lot of evidence that people want to locate their businesses and invest in areas which have access to a range of amenities. There's a whole economic development literature about the values of quality of life and amenities and people seeking that out. So you have professionals and business entrepreneurs who are seeking to invest in the Boulder, Colorados, kind of rural, rustic settings that they want to locate their high-tech, high-growth company. And New Hampshire could really be more part of that if we look at those amenities and those rural areas as an asset for Metro New Hampshire. And I don't think we've done that enough.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Boulder, Colorado. We're going to talk to somebody later who moved his business from Boulder, Colorado to northern New Hampshire. That'll be coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes here in The Exchange. You can join us right now with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we look at the two New Hampshires, a new white paper by Dr. Ross Gattell, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. And up first, Ross, is Toby in Greenfield. Hi, Toby. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead, Toby.
Well, I was just calling today because I grew up in rural New Hampshire, and a year ago I moved down to southern New Hampshire.
Wow.
What I have to say is that I think that the newspaper in southern New Hampshire is much better. You can go shopping at a lot more stores. There's a lot more opportunity to access, you know, Boston transportation to go to New York or wherever.
Sure.
I think you use the term socially advanced, and I'd like to say that I think southern New Hampshire is socially advanced because of those reasons.
So you moved from where, Toby, to Greenfield?
I grew up in Franconia, New Hampshire, where the old man of the mountain fell.
Sure. What drew you down to the seacoast area there?
A job.
Yeah.
Actually, I live towards Keene. I think you're thinking of Greenland.
Oh, of course. I sure am. Yep. I'm getting my greens mixed up. Go ahead, Toby.
And there's also a Greenville.
So what would you say to those who feel that, boy, you know, the North Country needs all the young people it can get, they represent the future of the region, what would you say to that area in terms of, you know, keeping people like you there? I guess what I'm asking is, what was lacking for you, Toby?
A job.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Northern Pass is the way to build jobs up there either. Because I know that a lot of my friends who still live up in that region, you know, won't be doing those jobs.
Okay.
And they'll still be jobless.
Toby, good to hear from you, and good to hear that you've got a job and that you're happy. Go ahead, Ross. Real interesting.
Yeah, no, you know, Toby's story is pretty common, and that's one of the challenges up in rural New Hampshire is that there's this declining young adult population. Those between the ages of 25 and 44. And we identified that in the paper, that if rural New Hampshire were a separate state, it would have the lowest percentage in the country of all states if rural New Hampshire was a state in terms of percentage of young adults, those between 25 and 44. And therefore, it's difficult for businesses to locate there that needs a large pool of younger workers like Toby. And then it's difficult for individuals like Toby to find a job, so they migrate south. Now, sort of the good news is that he doesn't have to go to Georgia or North Carolina and leave New Hampshire. The bad news is that there's too many Tobys leaving the rural part of New Hampshire. And one of the challenges is it's difficult to attract businesses that require young workers or young skilled workers up to rural New Hampshire because of the limited supply. But then when you do have somebody who wants to work and is available, there's limited jobs, and it's a chicken and egg type of problem.
Yeah, so, real interesting. Yeah. To hear Toby talk about he likes the social opportunities and the cultural life, but what really drew him to Greenfield was that job.
Yeah, no, the job's critical. Job's critical. And linking whatever education Toby had to then ending up in an internship and then a job is really important to sustaining the population, particularly the young population in that area.
Well, thanks a lot, Toby, for calling in. And again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, you can post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Well, Ross, the title of your paper is The Two New Hampshires, and I don't want to ignore Metro New Hampshire. So for more on that now, we're joined by David Priest. He's Executive Director of the Southern New Hampshire Planning Commission. And David Priest, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for asking me to join the conversation.
Well, your area includes urban, suburban, but also some rural, different populations, different needs.
Yeah.
How do you, as Executive Director of this whole enterprise, David, navigate across these communities and their different needs, their different qualities?
Well, the first thing that we do is we try to get them to the table and discuss what their strengths and their weaknesses are. We find that there are value in all of our communities, and there's great resources that all of them could benefit from. You know, the city of Manchester has great things going for it, but so does the communities of Ware and New Boston, where, you know, their population is considerably smaller. But it's getting the representatives, the community leaders to the table and start talking about how we can, number one, share our services and our resources across borders of communities. And then number two, play up our strengths and our weaknesses so that everybody benefits.
Play up our strengths and our weaknesses. Now, from what I understand, David, you've done a regional economic development plan kind of saying that, right? What are
exactly.
our strengths?
And in that economic development plan, we did individual economic profiles for each of the communities in our region, which kind of pointed out what their strengths and their weaknesses are, their opportunities, and what are their challenges. And from that, we did a targeted industry analysis to see what kind of businesses would be the best fit for each of our communities. And I think the exercise and the assessment was very needed. It kind of gave people an idea what they should be aiming for in their communities.
And what they shouldn't be aiming for,
and
right?
Exactly. Not all of them have the infrastructure, the water, and the utilities, sewer, but they all have something to bring to the table.
So on some level, is this about learning to live within your limits, within who you are?
I think that's a very good statement. That's one of the things that the studies brought out, is that we all have great resources, but we all need to know what our limitations are.
So give us an example, David. Yeah, if you could tell us, like, you know, there was a community that thought it wanted to go this direction, but after really studying it, it said, you know.
Well, we've had several communities that would love to entice a manufacturing firm up to, but they don't have the water and sewer. They don't have the trained labor force within a close proximity. And they don't have the transportation. So those are very important components, you know, to kind of entice or to bring in that industrial, the advanced high-tech manufacturing jobs that we all want to get. But you know, these smaller communities have recreational facilities. They have cultural, they have historical that they need to promote and to market.
So focus on the strengths again.
Focusing on the strengths, exactly.
I have one last question for you, David. You know, we talked earlier in the hour, and I think you were listening on the line there, about the struggles of rural New Hampshire as compared
right.
to the more prosperous southern tier. Again,
right.
obviously there are pockets of poverty and wealth everywhere in New Hampshire.
Right.
What
right.
responsibility do you think more prosperous regions of New Hampshire have toward these rural areas that may be struggling a little bit more? I mean, is there a responsibility, or is everybody kind of on their own here?
No, there is a responsibility for the larger communities to engage in conversation with the smaller rural communities. And we're finding this out with a program that we are currently engaged with. It's a mutual sharing, and we call this survival through regionalization. And we're working with the New Hampshire Center of Public Policy and Chris Porter on this. And what we're trying to do is to encourage people to think outside of their boundaries, to think what types of services and resources they could share, you know, such as fire, police, public works equipment. I mean, there's a lot that they could share and lower their cost to their communities, but at the same time maintain that quality of life that they now enjoy.
Well, David, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
That's David Preece, Executive Director of the Southern New Hampshire Planning Commission, representing Manchester and the surrounding area. Ross Cattell, what do you think? This idea of, yes, we're all linked.
Oh, yeah, and I think one thing I want to pick up on from David is the sharing resources idea. I think that's critical. And I'll give a very specific example from our community college system, is that some of our larger colleges like NHTI have very strong programs in information technology, computer science, and they have strong enrollment in there. They could fill classes. And then you have our more rural colleges. Let's take one of them, White Mountains Community College, where if they offered a specialized computer programming course, they might have one or two or, you know, half a dozen students, where cost effectively we can't teach that course every semester. But if we were able to share, and which we're doing now, sharing that course at NHTI with students at White Mountains Community College, then we could serve the education needs across the state more effectively, and it would make for a much more economical delivery of that course at NHTI also. Now, the challenge is that it's very difficult physically for the student to come down from White Mountains to NHTI, but through online education, we're enabling that.
All right, let's go back to our listeners. And John is waiting in Colebrook. Hi, John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I just wanted to bring up something that we might miss because there's so much to talk about here. Not just the vast disparities between north of the Notches and south of the Notches, which is the way I think most people tend to think of the state. Hence the time-honored term, down below. It's down below the Notches and up above the Notches. It has been in use ever since the first settlers. But anyway, two things. We really have to make best use of our resources, and we have a tremendous resource sitting on the stump pretty much here in terms of middle-aged hardwood trees that are suitable for many, many uses, furniture, tools, et cetera, et cetera. If you look back at the history of Coos County from 1888 and go through town-by-town industries, it would make you cry. We need to recover that sort of use. The second point is...
So make better use of the lumber, the trees there. Go ahead, John, yeah.
For job-intensive use rather than in one-shot use, which is burning them up for electricity or sending them off to other places to make paper. Of course, you know, we have sawmills, but not as many as we did, nowhere near. But the second point is, I wonder if anybody really has a handle on how the Internet has emancipated business owners, business managers, to allow them to live north of the Notches where they really want to be because of the incredible beauty of the landscape and many multiple-use recreational.
That is a great point, actually. We should talk about that after a super short break, Ross Cattell. John, thanks for calling in.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, U.S. bishops face a lawsuit over abortion policies at Roman Catholic hospitals. Then a government accountability expert on how Washington politicians legally extort contributions from big donors. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from New Hampshire Humanities Council, connecting people with ideas through hundreds of programs open to the public each year with a searchable calendar at nhhc.org. And North Branch Construction celebrating 55 years in business, from custom-built homes to eco-friendly commercial buildings, on time, on budget. Find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at some of the concepts included in a new white paper by our guest today, Dr. Ross Cattell, Chancellor of the Community College System of New Hampshire. The paper's called The Two New Hampshires. What does it mean? And it looks about the divide economically, demographically, between the more southeastern metro New Hampshire and the more rural western and northern New Hampshire. The paper's online, by the way, at our website, nhpr.org. You can find it there. You can give us a call, too, right now at 1-800-892-6477. Which New Hampshire do you live in? What do you think it has going for it? How could it be made stronger? 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And Ross Cattell, before we get back to our listeners, I did want to pick up on John's point in Colebrook. And John, thank you for the call. His second point, especially the internet and how it has revolutionized the ability for people to live in these beautiful, more quiet rural areas and still have, you know, well-paying jobs.
Yeah, the internet could really be an enabler of change in positive change in rural New Hampshire if its influence and its implementation and role is influenced by local people in their community. So how they use it as another resource and market it, promote it, integrate it into their community is really important. And what John had suggested is use it to help attract entrepreneurs who want to start a business and be able to work hard during the day, but maybe in the afternoon recreate a little bit and have a place, a high-quality place to raise a family. And that brings in those young adults starting families who could be skilled workers who create jobs in those areas. That's a very exciting opportunity, and there's increased availability of high-quality broadband and affordable broadband in that area, but it's still coming. It isn't quite there as it is in the metro New Hampshire areas.
Well, is that why you use the verb could, Ross? I was interested that you, yeah. You know, because for a lot of people, it's already here.
Well, I think that's one of the problems. We say, oh, it's here. Why isn't it happening?
Right.
It's an enabler, but it has to be acted upon, and I think it could be acted upon by people in the community, marketing it, promoting it, putting it together with other attributes of these communities to really let others know about the quality of these communities and the availability. I think the real possibility is the connecting the two New Hampshires. That could be a real strength in New Hampshire and increase the economic vitality throughout the state. And I think we have the opportunity, and the internet broadband is possibly enabling that at this time.
Okay. Well, and again, we've got Ross's white paper on our website, The Two New Hampshires, What Does It Mean? Also on our website, there's a New Hampshire broadband mapping and planning program at UNH looking at this issue. It looks at broadband availability in New Hampshire. And we'll link that on our webpage as well. Speaking of using the internet
as
an opportunity for information and so forth. Let's go back to our callers if we could, Ross. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email from Bill who says, I came down from the North Country in the early 60s because there wasn't much work slash opportunities unless you worked in the woods or in the paper mills long gone. Yes, there were jobs, but a lot of people looking for them. I doubt I will ever go back permanently. It's at least 20 to 30 degrees colder in winter, and once I-93 was run through the notch, land values tripled, if not more. It doesn't say where Bill is living now, but here's another person, kind of like Toby, who made the move south and doesn't sound like he's planning to go back.
Yeah, again, there's a dynamic. You know, people move, people migrate in and out of the state. They move within the state. And, you know, again, the key is to provide strong education and economic opportunities to residents in rural New Hampshire. But having that linkage between rural New Hampshire and metro New Hampshire could benefit definitely people like Bill, like Toby, who moved down, but also people who decide that they don't like the suburbanization of Nashua, or that Concord used to be more rural, but now it's turning like more like Nashua, so I want to move further north. That retains those people here in New Hampshire.
Well, speaking of people seeking opportunity in rural New Hampshire, we're going to be talking now with Mike Larrasee. He's founder and CEO of Rapid Insight, Inc., a high-tech company in North Conway. And Mike Larrasee, it's good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, from what I've been told, you came here from Boulder, Colorado. Now, I thought Boulder was nirvana for high-tech types. So why'd you come to New Hampshire?
That's right. So I lived in Boulder for about 5 years, and my whole family is on the East Coast, so I always knew I was going to come back. And North Conway is kind of a smaller version of Boulder. It's got all the same amenities. It's got the mountains and all the fun things that Boulder has.
And tax-free shopping.
Exactly.
Well, Mike, how do you feel about this idea that we're talking about this hour, the two New Hampshires that Ross Cattell has written about?
Well, Ross brought up the whole idea of internet access, and without broadband access, I don't think it would be even possible to start a company up here. So having that makes it possible, and doesn't really matter where we locate, to run a business. Now with in the age of the internet, and that's really what allows us to be up here. And we've got a in this area. I think this is more of what Mill referred to as the an amenity rich area. We've got lots of young people. We've got the outdoors. People want to come here, and we want to we're working to enable the Tobys and the Bills to be able to stay up here to be able to find jobs up here. So that's we're hoping to do our part in doing that.
We hear a lot of complaints, Mike, from the business community about a lack of workers trained in the so-called STEM area: science, technology, engineering, and math. You run a high-tech company. What have you found?
We haven't had any problems finding great, talented, smart people up here, and there's also people that want to move up here from southern New Hampshire, from the Boston area. So I think that Ross and the community college system and the educational system in general is doing a good job at educating people and matching the skills needed with the demand for those skills, and is working to make that tie a little tighter.
If there was one aspect of either the workforce or the broader economy there in the North Country, in North Conway, that you could change to make your business even more successful, Mike, what would that be?
I guess if there were one thing I could change, maybe more networking opportunities. So the one thing we're lacking up here is the ability to go somewhere after work and meet with 50 other like-minded entrepreneurial type people. And but we've got Manchester 2 hours away. We've got Portland a little over an hour away. We've got Boston less than 3 hours away. So we're really not that far from that.
Okay, Mike, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Mike Larracy, founder and CEO of Rapid Insight, Inc. in North Conway. As we heard, he moved here from Boulder, Colorado to start his high-tech company. You can join us with your questions and comments about the two New Hampshires, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. Ross, I have to ask you real quick. You and I have talked about this. I've talked about this with countless business leaders. Here's Mike Larracy saying, no, I don't really see a shortage of these STEM workers.
Yeah, I think Mike's a good example. Is he had a commitment to be on the East Coast for family reasons. I think if I was Dredd, I'd put him on a billboard, with his quote, North Conway has same amenities as Boulder, Colorado, and put that in the congested highways between Denver and Boulder. Because I think a lot of, people don't know about the North Conways of New Hampshire and the opportunities there. And Mike is pretty humble, but he's a very successful business person. They're growing a business, and he has customers all over the nation. Over 170 universities and colleges are his customers across the nation. And he's found that skilled STEM-related workforce. So I think sometimes we exaggerate the problems and don't emphasize our resources and benefits. And often you need an outsider like Mike to come in from a place like Boulder that's out there on a kind of shining pedestal and say, we have a lot going on in New Hampshire, including in North Conway and including in rural New Hampshire. And we have to put some of that on a billboard. And we have to talk about the assets that we have and grow those assets and recognize where our shortcomings are. And our shortcomings are pretty clear. In rural New Hampshire, and that's with regards to the shortages of young adults, skilled adults, the local population, and making sure the people there get the appropriate training, education, work experience that they could start their own businesses there and then work for growing businesses like Rapid Insights.
What would you say the shortcomings are of Metro New Hampshire, Ross? I mean, they're not getting off scot-free. They've got their own issues.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is, how different is part of Metro New Hampshire from, closer into Boston, the Lexingtons, the Wathams, and, you're going to live in Nashua and have some of the same suburban issues and problems as Watham or Lexington, but have a much longer commute, and then you don't have commuter rail service. So, you know, if we're not in Metro New Hampshire taking better advantage of our connection to Boston and making easier transportation linkages, I mean, in I think the Seacoast area in Portsmouth's done a better job through a private bus company, C&J Trailways. If I need to get a bus to go to the Federal Reserve Bank in Boston, I could take a 6 a.m. bus, a 6:20 bus, a 6:40 bus, a 7 a.m. bus, and be a five-minute walk from South Station of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston in the financial district.
And get some work done on the
bus. And you on the internet. Now, if there was more linkage like that, and you don't need expensive trains to do that. Buses could be very effective and use a private entrepreneur. That has to happen more and more for Southern New Hampshire, for Metro New Hampshire, to strengthen and make more solid that connection to a very strong Boston-Cambridge economy.
So we're connected anyway economically.
Yeah.
Why not
so
make
let's
that connection?
Connect that connection stronger from Metro to Boston and then between Metro New Hampshire and rural New Hampshire.
Let's take another call if we could. Lots of people who want to jump in our conversation. Ross, this is Jason calling in from the North Country. Go ahead, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi, my name's Jason Tours. I moved up from New York City about 12 years ago, and I got a job working at Garnet Hill in Franconia. And Garnet Hill is a home and women's wear catalog and website. And they brought me up here, and I went from New York City, which, of course, is rich, culturally diverse, great music, great food. And recently in the past, I'd say 3 or 4 years, I've seen a really big uptick in cultural attractions in the North Country, specifically in...
Which town are you in, Jason? Yeah, sorry, Jason, to interrupt. You just told our screener that you're from the North Country. Which town are you in?
I live in Sugar Hill.
In Sugar Hill. Okay, go ahead, please.
Specifically in Littleton and Bethlehem, there's really a great growing population of artists, musicians, and culture that's happening. Specifically in Littleton, there's some really amazing food to be had. There's Cheng Thai, which is an amazing little Thai food restaurant.
So cultural amenities growing. Don't forget the pianos downtown on Main Street there in Littleton.
And Shutters. And Shutters.
And the world's longest candy counter. Right, yeah, and it's great to hear from you, Jason. What do you think? We can't forget this cultural side. You can't just have a great job if it's there's nothing else to do.
Jason's example is a really good one, Littleton. And we have the community college system has an academic center there in Littleton, and it's doing well. It has strong programs. It's serving that community. And you go downtown, and there's young adults, there's the amenities, there's good restaurants. Very attractive area. Jason's a great story coming up from New York City and very satisfied with his move up to rural New Hampshire.
Okay. Jason, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Here's an email from Katie in Durham. She says, I've lived in both New Hampshires, grew up in Durham, moved my business and myself to Berlin. The striking difference between the two is the speed of change. It seems in the North Country, people talk a great deal about change, but, Katie says, nothing ever changes. On the seacoast, she says, you see incredibly rapid change, e.g. Portsmouth, that in 1994, property was cheap and there were no jobs. 10 years later, she says, we had the e-coast movement and essentially zero unemployment, spaces at a premium. Katie says, I'm curious to what Dr. Gattell thinks is the cause of this difference. Katie, good to hear from you. What do you think, Ross?
I think part of it is that when you have more fluid population, a lot more in-migration. Remember, Rockingham, Hillsborough in particular, have a very high percentage of adults there who have moved from New York City, like Jason moved from Pennsylvania, from Massachusetts. So these people are used to change and embrace change if it's in a positive direction, whereas a lot of people up in rural New Hampshire are from that area. There hasn't been that influx in a significant way of people. And instead of sort of look towards pathways to a better future, they're holding on what exists in the old economy and worried that if they give something up from the old economy, there'll be nothing in its place. So I think, and you know, I could really appreciate people up in Berlin and rural New Hampshire where there isn't that clear economic future for them. So their resistance to change because they're worried about losing that last mill or losing that last retail store downtown instead of thinking about reinventing themselves like an area like Portsmouth did over the last 20 years. So I think it's incumbent upon leadership, political and business leadership there, to show the pathway towards a stronger future for people up in those areas, as opposed to say, you know, you have to change because the past can't be continued.
What's your hope, Ross? You've gotten a lot of reaction from this white paper, The Two New Hampshires. We've gotten a lot of reaction from our listeners today. What's your hopes for how this moves forward? The struggles of the North Country are well known. We've talked about it a lot, but this is a different take.
Yeah. You know, my hope, and part of it is achieved in today's show, is to start some conversations that include people from Metro New Hampshire and people from rural New Hampshire, and focused on the connections between those two and where there's mutual benefits from those connections and how to enable those by specific policies. So with limited resources, public resources for public investment, how could we invest in the local schools, in early childhood education, in business development, in job recruitment, in tourism, in investment in higher education, that helps to connect in a mutually beneficial way the two New Hampshires to make for a stronger Metro New Hampshire and a stronger rural New Hampshire.
All right. Ross, this has been really interesting. Thank you very much for being here.
Okay. Thank you for having me, Laura.
Again, the white paper is The Two New Hampshires, What Does It Mean? By Dr. Ross Gatell, Chancellor of the Community College System of New Hampshire. If you want to look at the report yourself, it's on our website, nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Russian relations reconsidered. U.S. ties with Russia have always been complicated, but now even more so, with disputes over how to approach the war in Syria, Russia's protection of NSA leaker Edward Snowden, as well as the recent tug of war over Ukraine. We'll examine this fraught relationship and how it's changed. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 959. Good morning. The Diane Rehm Show next at 10. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New Hampshire Catholic Charities. Wishing a Merry Christmas to all. Catholic Charities moving lives forward through education, counseling, and caring. Dignified services. nh-cc.org. And from New Hampshire for the Holidays, expo and entertainment that immerses you in the holiday spirit. December 7th and 8th at the Radisson Hotel in Manchester. EventsNH.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed suit against the country's Roman Catholic bishops. The ACLU claims Catholic hospitals followed church directives that compromised medical care for women. The suit setters on the case of a pregnant